Episode 9.
Right, guys, welcome to episode 9 of the podcast. We have Marty McLaughlin on here. Welcome, Marty. I'm going to just give you a quick rundown of what Marty's actually achieved. Now, Marty's obviously a BJJ coach for anybody that doesn't know. And obviously, he teaches, MMA as well.
Yeah.
And his studio, fuck's sake, I'm working with gym owners too much. His, what do you call it, a dojo?
We call it an academy.
Academy, right. We call it an academy then. His academy is actually based in Derry in Pennyburn. Massive growing fucking trend now in Derry that we see. And that's why we want to get Marty on the show. But I'm going to give you a quick rundown of what Marty's accolades are here, because there's a fucking big list of them here. We have, obviously, he's a BJJ black belt. He's a BWA level 2 wrestling coach, European champion gi master, European runner-up. This is a long list. No gi master. British Open gi twice.
Aye.
Marty doesn't even want to say any of this. I don't really know. Keep going for fuck's sake. Irish Open champion gi twice and Scottish Open champion, so no gi. A lot of accolades, bud.
Aye.
Long time in the game too, like.
Long time.
And it has been like, I know Marty for years, and we didn't even have to do much research on him because we both of us know him a long time. And Marty's been at this for just forever, man.
An overnight success in 15 years.
Overnight, exactly. Yeah. Like every overnight success, man, just happened. Like, and I remember you, obviously, from... Even out in Paddy Tolan's, before that, I think he's renting space in the.
We started off very humbly, Derek Lynch's gym actually.
That's exactly where you started.
Extreme Fitness.
We had to pull the mats out.
About 15 mats maybe, and we used to roll around and try and figure this stuff out without any real tuition or any real way forward, trying to work out what they do and how to do it. And it was mad times because we literally didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah. You
know? But we just had this. I had this obsession with getting good at this sport. Where you didn't have to hurt anybody really badly.
Yeah.
But it was so obscure, we didn't know how to get good at it, you know? So it was like this obsession with something which was completely utterly new to everybody, you know?
So there was no learning? There was no fucking YouTube?
No. There was no YouTube. People didn't do instructionals. Well, you had to pay for instructionals. It was too expensive. You couldn't get the feel from it. So therefore, it was limited in its value. So you had to understand the techniques first. In order to see what the value was in it, and we were just starting off, just rolling around, not knowing.
So see, even like, kind of how did that even come about? No, because obviously your sporting background, you wouldn't have started off in a BJJ or.
No.
I know you started in wrestling first, and then BJJ.
I started off, well, grappling, wasn't it? Growing up, I'd done sports all my life, right? But then I actually got into some weight training, and I was just trying to ease boys, like obviously we know these two boys a long time, so. On the gym one day, and the gym was shutting, boys were around the back training, and I was like, what are they doing? And seeing the boys moving, doing these moves and techniques, and I was sort of intrigued. And then it's kind of something from the outside you can't really judge until you're involved in it. So you look, you go, what's that? And then the physical aspect of it and how immobile I was and how useless I was to the person when they actually trap you, you understand though. And
of course.
You're trained, so you understand. It was almost like a drowning sensation where I wanted to fight back, but I couldn't because I literally just could. I just felt as if I got tired and I was drowning and I was like, oh, I want to give up. And then I got intrigued by it. I was like, how can somebody use that on me without actually hurting me, but making me want to physically quit?
It's like fucking waterboarding almost.
It's just, and it's a different experience for everybody who does it. Mm. You know what I mean? Everybody gets something else with it. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm not portraying, like, waterboarding's obviously brutal. I'm portraying it as something that's fucking, honestly, BJJ and even combat sports, like, they've changed me quite a lot in my mindset and got rid of a lot of fucking fears for me. And that's why it was great to have you on the show because. Yeah. As a coach, loads of respect for you. I can't even take a hand. I don't even want to mention the chokers in case I fucking do end up getting choked. Brought up already. We were good two minutes on the show. But that's the thing. Like, you have that much time and respect for you. Like, I'm thinking, geez.
Or vice versa.
I can't even slag this man off.
Slag away. Slag away.
Right then, well. So bring up a up.
I know Seamus will.
He's just waiting. He's a rope down.
I got all wrote down. No, so obviously, we know each other a long time. Met you basically in Dave's from the whole bodybuilding thing. So what I'm trying to find out is, when was your first kind of, wouldn't have been looking at magazines for BJJ or wrestling and stuff. So was that your first interaction
in the gym? Dave used to facilitate about out the back. You know, and I knew about it then, and it was the early days and people in Derry were training. And I remember some crazy sparring sessions were going on there. I was like, no, I'm not part of that.
No.
It was too mad. It was just too raw. There was nothing really that technical about it. And I was like, that wasn't me, you know. I am, by nature, I'm not somebody who likes to hurt people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not. So that was just too mad. I was on watching a sparring session one day, and a boy went nearly through the wall. And it's like, I think it was Malika's brother was there sparring with a guy, one of the guys from Derry. And I was like, no, this is too mad for me.
Yeah.
But like, I was intrigued, you know, because like at the end of the day, I think a lot of people start off, and just my experience now, go to the gym because they want to get a bit bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
Some of them people are coming from a background where they've been bullied.
100%.
You know, and they get pushed in this direction because they see they get respect from bigger muscles and bigger person or bigger physical presence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was in the gym and I was like, maybe I was one of them, I don't know. But I was in the gym and I seen us out the back and I was like, oh, there's a different way, you know, look at that there. Mm. It's different. But I was too mad. I was just too,
aye.
I was just too quiet for it, you know. And whenever I got the, I changed gyms to Extreme Fitness, and I noticed that the same type of boys were trying to do it a bit lighter. I was like, maybe I'll get a chance here today, you know, but I used to come out every Saturday like a car crash.
Right.
Honestly, God, whiplash every week.
So see, when you went on the wrestling first?
I started off doing MMA actually first, and I used to travel.
EFR, wasn't it?
EFR. So I was training in Derry, and we didn't really know what we were doing. And then I was going to EFR in Antrim, which was called UFR, which was called Progressive Combat before that, you know. So David Patterson, he was the best coach in Ireland. At that stage, they had the best fight team, bar none.
No,
yeah.
I remember.
SBG was kind of like coming up, and Davies was like the team who they beat. You know?
Yeah.
So me being me, my personality, it's either all or nothing. So I found the best person to train with. And me, Paddy Doherty, and Darren Henderson started training together, traveling up the road.
Brilliant. And obviously that just sparked a bigger passion.
It did. I think the crossroads came for me. As you used to know, like I used to be a school teacher. So very early on, I was made. The schools didn't really understand what I was doing. I'm still regarded as underground cockfighting, you know.
Yeah.
So anybody who spoke to me about what we were doing, it was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I can tell this person. Because it was really badly received, you know. And
you can't sit down with someone and explain. And then you're coming on with a fucking black eye or something. There, going,
well, here we are. Like I was on. What actually happened was an incident in school, and I was brought on. And my nose was broke, and we spoke to you about my broken nose and how it happened. And basically, you have to make a decision here. Which way do you want to go?
Yeah.
You know, do you want
to, I know it's right.
Well,
and was that, were you given the ultimatum? Was it?
Well, no, it was just like a suggestion, you know what I mean? Because like, I was teaching in schools, exactly, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, right, I was like, this is my career, so I have to, if I want to keep training, I keep training jiu-jitsu. You know, well, the likelihood is that I'm not going to get busted up, you know?
Yeah.
I still don't, it's not fair.
No,
people do judge, and the problem with MMA was, there is, seemed to be, what you said, fucking really rung true in my head. I'm going, there it was, that side that people had that instinct and the aggressive people. Yeah. And then there was people who treat it like an art.
Yeah. Mm.
No, and it really was fucking cut down the middle.
Yeah.
And I always found the aggressive people, whatever reason they started off in the game, they didn't progress as well as the people who treat it like an art.
I say it regularly to people, we don't want tough guys.
No. Nah.
We want people who need martial arts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hard men don't need martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And people who consider themselves hard are found out very early, you know, because they're humbled by some young guy who's like, felt like a whoppet.
We Andy Chapman brought it up in the podcast, man. Last 2 weeks ago, he was saying that has one of his first experiences, and he was down and he was just getting absolutely smashed. And he seen a wee guy in the corner, 16-year-old, and he's like,
right,
I'm choosing him next. And he gets smashed even harder.
He actually named the guy. I don't know what his name is, but he said you probably would know him.
It's like, what the fuck?
It is humbling.
It's humbling, man. It's not what people perceive it to be.
No.
It's a skill-based art.
Yeah. Massively. You know
what I mean? So at the start, these two boys, big and strong, can come in and dominate the boys. But if you don't look beyond your strength and they look to the technique, after a period of time, regardless of size and age,
you're going to be left behind,
you know what I mean?
Do you know, this is what I would like to tell people, my experience of it. Like, it's hard for, and Seamus will probably relate to this, and you'll relate to it too, it's hard to fucking switch off sometimes from business. Like, my problem with business is it's 24/7 with me.
Yeah.
And I'm fucking constantly thinking about, what can I do better? What can I do this? What can I do? Never switch off. And a massive guilt complex from which used to let me switch off.
Yeah.
See, now it doesn't. It doesn't fucking really inspire me that much at all because I've no real set goals. See, when I go into BJJ or MMA, if it was that, warm up, I'm about 60-40. Still thinking business, 60-40. get into technique, it's more like 70.
You have to be BJJ. Present. Mm. You have to be present.
See when it gets into rolling. I can't even remember my fucking name, exactly. Sir. Yeah, all I'm thinking about is, you, as you said, that drowning thing. And it's fucking unreal. You have to switch off.
You have to be present at that moment in time. It forces you to be in the moment.
It's fucking
you can't
crazy.
Think about other things there and then. When somebody's trying to strangle or choke you,
you're not thinking about fucking doing anything.
That's an unreal experience. And I would say to anyone, Dick, this is what you need. Like, I've even told some of my clients, you know, it's coming to me, and as you say, you don't really know why you're starting something. No. You start out in weights and you're thinking, I'm going to do this for this reason, but and that's not really the reason.
No.
I have told some of my clients, man, you, this isn't for you. Like, you need to go and maybe look up BJJ or some sort of MMA. Because I think it's that fucking good. And maybe it's just for me, my perspective, and what it helped me with confidence and stuff, because... Yeah.
But you can see, you can see even like how popular it has become. Like you're going back in your teaching days, and it was you were basically demonized.
Because
it wasn't. It was just coming up then, really. It was starting to become popular, and it was seen as cockfighting, where people were in a cage, biting the living head of one another, basically. And now it's a lot more popular, and it's not been as demonized as much, and it's accepted by nearly all.
It's walks of life. Strange one. Like how I thought like this is really getting there. Like, years ago, nobody knew what MMA was. MMA.
No. Yeah, they'd say, you know what I mean? People dressed as cage fighting.
Yeah, just like cage fighting. And then one day I was down visiting my granny, and she says, I see a Conor McGregor boy won the World Championship in UFC. And, like, my granny was in her late 70s, and she was housebound. I was like, how does she know this? So I was like, if the media have gotten out of the stage of my granny who listens to the radio, and she can't read because her eyesight, she understands who Conor McGregor is, and he's a world champion, and he's from Ireland.
Yeah.
Then we are there. That's exposure and marketing.
That was obviously a big turning point in our country. Like,
huge for everybody. Huge for everybody.
I mean, you know him from fucking when he was fighting.
I knew, the last time I was I was actually near him was in Scotland at a Cage Warriors event. I don't know him. They speak to you. I know who he is. Obviously, everybody knows who he is. We're maybe in the same company from time to time in the past.
Right.
Don't know if you remember, like, but anyway, I was in Scotland. I won the Scottish Open, so I flew over that day on my own. Stayed with my sister-in-law, Michelle, and walked from her house to the venue, warmed up. There was one other Irish guy there, Joey Breslin. He's an older black belt now. He's really good level. Fought the guy that day, the guy who ran it. I fought a guy in the final, and he was one of the people arranging Cage Warriors. Now, Cage Warriors is the second biggest company outside the UFC. Probably Europe's biggest outside the UFC, you know. So he had set it up, and he was involved, and we could chat in the end. There's always huge respect for one another after the fight, you know, after the jiu-jitsu matches. Because, like, you're not trying to inflict damage, but you're trying to smut the person, which sounds controversial or contradictory, no, but it's not.
Makes sense.
You're trying to, like, make him concede without hurting. So he says to me, he says, you about tonight? And I says, I'm down the street here in Kelvin Hall. He says, look, we're having a big show on. I'm going to leave you complimentary tickets for you and your missus or whoever you want to bring. But I'm there on my own. So I go home, I get a bite to eat. There's nobody in the apartment because my sister-in-law and her boyfriend were away. And I'm sitting there, I'll go up. I'm a weirdo. I can't sit here up in the four walls. So I'll go up to the show. I text the guy, says, look, I'm coming. He says, look, I'll leave you the tickets at the front desk. So I went up and got in front of the queue, and he says, look, there's tickets for me. And I looked inside the envelope, there's a few tickets. And one of the head coaches from the Dinky Ninjas came out, Gary Christie, called him, unbelievable jiu-jitsu and such a nice guy as well. And he took me out the back. So as I went out the back, everybody's sitting there. And this is, I say, the last time I'd seen Connor, like within touching distance. John Kavanagh, the whole crew, Connor was there walking about with us, two belts from Cage Warriors. He just won the belts. And all I remember distinctly is the same persona as you see today.
People believe this is put on.
It's a part of his life.
So was he fighting that night?
No, he was there.
So he was just walking around with two belts on. Nobody knew him.
Well, out the back, the fighters knew him. But Conor McGregor is Conor Mcregor today. Not even remotely.
But that's what I mean. When you see this boy walking around with two fucking belts on, probably in the, walking in the stadium with two belts on.
He's walking everywhere. Just walking everywhere. So people believe, no, people would say, oh, you think that's fake?
It's put on. No, it's not at all.
It won tracks at bottom, rolled up to his knee. And he's walking about, and I was like, what the fuck? What's going on here? But I'll tell you one thing about him. They were watching fights, right? And as they were watching the fights out the back, we didn't even go in the stadium, they had a TV out the back. And I knew how how switched on he was. As he was watching the fights, him and his coach were doing the moves aye. That they seen that was new.
Aye.
So as they watched the fights, they were like going over the moves straight aye. Away, thinking, what did he do there?
Methodical, it was a man.
Different
Thought
level of thinking, you know what I mean?
So, you, at the end of the day, if you get that level, it has to be an obsession, and that's what he calls it. Like, you can't, but it, you just but can't get there.
I see people who are successful on a daily basis in the gym. Like, I have people who are doctors, own their accountancies, dentist practice, everything, and the one common denominator is as the day workhorses.
Aye,
they absolutely. Are all workers.
Aye, that's it.
And whether that be in sport, who have no money whatsoever but are lethal their sport, they have the same practice
as passion.
Who's passion.
It's obsession.
Obsession.
It is obsession.
Aye, definitely.
And you know, if you had to ask them anything, a question outside of their fucking knowledge base, they wouldn't know it. They're not interested in anything else. They're just not
fixated.
Fucking you know, absolutely.
It's hard to put on the words, you know. It's hard to put on the words why. It was someone you for me.
Yeah.
You
know so, I mean? See, so like, even going on that, Noel's talking about where he gets his outlet now, he's kind of doing BJJ and makes him forget about. So, what do you do? Because you're.
See, this is the hard thing.
You're on BJJ. This is the hard thing. All day,
the
every day.
The balance, that's the balance, you know. And I'm trying to work that out myself. My time at the minute is family. You know, that's my main thing. Like, London, my baby, and my baby to come now.
Yeah.
That's my main thing. So, for many years.
I was going to say, I have to say family as well. Just saying, if you're listening, I don't be thinking about work on with you.
But I'll be honest, I'm sure you boys are quite the same. Is it?
It's
you're
hard
working 24/7.
Yeah.
And the only thing I do outside of work is go home to my family, and that's it.
Aye.
And I try and switch it off, which I can't do.
Yeah.
And, spend time with my baby, spend that's time with my wife.
Except I even chatting to yourself, and we were chatting about the hours of BJJ in the evenings, and I was like, no, because I've worked that hard for to get the evenings off now, and I actually really value getting home and spending
home,
that time.
I haven't been home before 11 in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
11 p.m.
We were chatting before about the overnight success thing. You know, Marty's put on fucking major hours, and like that's probably why I have like utmost respect. Passion was there. When you didn't have the kind of money and disposable income you were spending and going to fucking Brazil and
nobody understands this side. You see, nobody understands this side. Like, at that time, it was like, what's he at? Aye. He's going where?
Yeah,
the dairy mentality is very different. You boys know the crack. Like, I'm sure you spoke about it, and they won nor. Is that people at this time were like, why are you wasting your time doing that for?
Mm.
And I was like, I'm not wasting my time. I just have this idea in my head that I want to be good at this.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, I don't know how good I can get at it. But I really want to be good at it.
Black belt's pretty good.
No, that's, but again, I'm sure in the same in fitness, if you delve into it, really, how deep's the rabbit hole? How good is good?
Oh, you keep compared to who? Exactly. You just keep going and going and going.
Compared
and
to who?
Courses. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But even I mind being in a course, it was last year, and it was the same thing. Somebody sent me a message, you're winning another course.
Mm-hmm.
I'm winning another course. That's a passion. It's something that, right, if I can go here and learn something different that I can actually use and apply to either my team or to a client or whatever, then of course it's worth the money.
Of course it
is. And you just keep doing that. You always want to upskill. And I think if you lost that, wanting to do that, then things are starting to fade, and maybe you're not in the right business anymore. Like, so you should always have that passion of being able to try and improve yourself constantly.
I wake up every morning buzzing to get on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is the key.
Mm.
Even mental and physical well-being, like, that's the main thing for me at this stage. Coaching, mental, physical well-being, wake up in the morning happy, be excited about what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Be tired, of course. Maybe be fed up sometimes, like, I need a break from this, you know what I mean? But every day, the first thought in my head is, Mag one, checking my wee boy, make sure my wife's good, and then go to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's
brilliant.
I do that too. See, now, I swear.
So you just got back there, you were in Lisbon with a team.
Aye.
Brilliant, eh?
Aye.
Four golds and two silvers.
Aye, so we went to Lisbon, the European Championships.
Which is the biggest, isn't it?
It's the biggest competition in the world, numbers-wise. It's an amazing event. So when you're there, it's a who's who of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's like, it's a bit surreal. Like, imagine going to play or going to watch a match and meeting Messi afterwards while he's drinking a coffee sitting beside you. You know, it's just, you just can't comprehend it. The people are within touching distance. I went to get a bite to eat. There's my coach. There's his head coach came from Brazil there, who awarded me my black belt. And then the opposite side of him is Travis Stevens, the current Olympic silver medalist in judo.
Yeah.
And his coach, who is the current American coach for judo, most successful coach, one of the most successful coaches in the world. And we're all sitting at the same table.
Yeah.
And it's mad. Like,
you're shaking.
When do you get to sit down beside Ronaldo?
And that's it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So what about the rest of the team, the guys that were competing and stuff? We great experience for them?
Brilliant. We had 16 athletes that went, and we came back with 6 medals. And the numbers there mightn't sound too great to the people listening, but it's a massive achievement.
It's a huge competition.
Four goals. European champions.
It's unreal. And you know, I wanted to touch on that too, actually, because you obviously do really fucking well competition, but it's not based on that, isn't it?
No.
People don't need to be thinking, if we're not going to BJJ, he's going to throw me in an old competition. No. And
it's probably the same as yourselves. You're trying to build somebody up. Mentally and physically first.
Just because you're doing wits doesn't mean you want to do you
a
want
bodybuilding
to
show.
Exactly.
So are you going to do a photo shoot?
What is your typical client? What will they come and do for Marty?
I have a total variety of people. I have people there, they lost weight. I have people there want to build up their confidence. I have people there with genuine interest. I have people there who have interest sparked by MMA. I have a wide variety of people there. But the main thing is, first and foremost, I think for a competitor, is that you have to be mentally in a good place. You know what I mean? And I think jiu-jitsu is amazing for that. Martial arts in general is amazing for that, because it can help your confidence. It can help how you view things. Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by like-minded people. You have the buzz of people who are all being uplifted at the same time. So therefore, you get uplifted along with.
That's right.
So whenever you get mentally in the right place and happy, which for me is like peace of mind, then the physical aspect comes along in. And then the physical aspect comes along and they think, I trained that guy here and he won the Northern Ireland Championship. Do you think I should compete? It's a very personal thing for you. How are you feeling? How's your body? How are you? What age are you? Although it doesn't really matter, but some people come to me in their 40s and say, I want to compete. Of course.
Well, there's been, I've seen an increase in age, like of people starting to join up, and even the pictures you're putting up on Facebook. It's mad now. It's changing to be slightly older. Whenever we started, it was young,
of course, aggressive,
angry,
young men,
young 20s. I'm not saying that you still get people that got coming in, but the fact that it's slightly older now and people realizing, Jesus, this isn't actually as hard on me as I'm thinking.
The game has changed more from the physical aspect to the technical aspect.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Without sounding too happy.
No.
It's kind of like learning skills and going beyond that under the mental side of it as well. It's trying to like live a better lifestyle.
And not even that, I suppose, for older people, improving, fucking still keeping motor patterns and mobility and
my oldest attendee is 72. 72 years of old. You know what I mean? So
I heard he's a beast.
I swear to God.
Someone tell me, Jesus, you're like, I fucking paired up with him. Tap me out about four times.
He's a beast. But don't get me wrong, he comes from a sporting background as well, judo, but he's the oldest attendee you have and the youngest of seven. So like it's
I try to get look into it, like my wee boy. Still trying to get him into it, but I'm trying to. I always felt like it lets him come out of his shell and be. Do you know when you're holding back because you're kind of a fear of, and the confidence thing is more like a fear of like someone beating you up, like going out to town and not being yourself on a Saturday night because you're worried. What's he going to do? Right, you know, just allow you to have a voice and not worry about. You know what I mean? And I always felt that I want you to have that. I don't want you to be held back by anything.
Of course, here's my take on it, right? My wee boy as well. My wee boy comes to me and says, Daddy, I want to be a ballet dancer. Right? Now, you know how difficult it could be for a boy to say that in Derry. So if he comes to me and says, I want to be a ballet dancer, I'd say, look, I want you. Luke's my son as well. So I'd say, I want you to do martial arts. Now, it's contradictory in what I'm saying here. But what I want to do is instill the self-confidence and values
discipline
of martial arts. So if he chooses to do whatever he wants to do, that he can, not physically impose, but he has the ability to stand up for himself. And turn and say, listen, I don't care what you say. This is what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Just be assertive. And I think within martial arts, I think you can create an environment where your kids can overcome, where they meet adversity, but it's controlled. And they can overcome it in a period of time. It's not easy for them. The other styles of adversity is fighting for real.
100%.
Whatever, maybe other sports where they get punched in the face or whatever, which is no disrespect to them.
No.
But there's ways of creating adversity. And I believe that jiu-jitsu especially is one for me, for what I do, and for my kid. It'd be a good way for him to overcome adversity.
They're able to kind of understand it and deal with a situation probably 10 times easier than anybody else, especially another kid. Like, they're coming from a perspective of, right, you don't have to do this, you don't have to go and smash somebody.
Of course.
I liked it because it's instinctive for human beings. I don't care when anyone turns around and says, oh, it's fucking terrible, that's bad. For meals, even the protective instincts for humans. And they need an outlet. I think men, especially now, as we spoke yesterday, it was actually someone else in the group was saying, you know, sticks have been replaced by mobile phones now. You know, aggression's nearly in your hand from people, fucking keyboard warriors and all the rest. It's a way of venting. You're designed to kind of do this.
Of course.
And not in a, because it isn't fighting, but it's combat in some way.
It is combat. It's the gentlest form of combat.
Exactly.
They subdue somebody.
Aye.
You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, choking somebody and maybe them going unconscious doesn't seem very gently people watching.
No. Yeah.
But without having to destroy their face or hurt them really badly, you know what I mean? It sounds, it's just an amazing sport for me, you know what I mean? It's just something that needs to be experienced in order to understand.
Is there one aspect that you could say that it's massively changed you in, or is it just a whole lot of things overall?
Well, I think it's just the mental and physical. The competition's a byproduct.
You
know what I mean? People look at me as the competitor and the coach.
That's right, yeah.
But first of all, it had to fix me with whatever mindset I had beforehand. And it's helped me in that way to find my peace.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. And to move forward from that, you know.
Because a lot of people that we speak to and a lot of people that do BJJ, like the overwhelming factor that people always say about that the experience is kind of the mental aspect. Not just the physical, it's more the mental.
Imagine being in a room where you're with somebody that money doesn't matter.
That's right.
Background doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Job doesn't matter.
Mm.
Family circumstances doesn't matter.
Aye.
Your drug habit doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Your drinking problem doesn't matter. Your whatever, somebody's in jail, doesn't matter.
Aye.
We're all equal.
Yeah.
And the only thing that counts then is skill.
Yeah.
That's it. So you could have a kid, for example. I had a kid at the European Championships that won there, just turned 17 the other day. So you have him at 55 kilos, along with somebody who's maybe a millionaire, for example.
Yeah.
And that's millions will not save him. No. Will not save him.
And he's tapping out.
He has to be present.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Right. So you've handed yourself over to your partner, almost to somebody of supreme skill to you, and you're trusting them with your body at that particular point in time. And no matter what else you have going on in your life, doesn't count. And will not be not come into factor at that particular point.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we talked about the way it humbles you.
And
some people do need that sometimes, you know, where they feel like everything's fucking, I'm this and that, I can do this, and kind of life becomes a wee bit boring. A fucking millionaire would benefit massively from coming into BJJ and getting humbled by 55 kilos.
Somebody said to me the other day that just about training and stuff and what motivates you. It's kind of like you try and find the person that's going to teach you the biggest lessons, right? And they find the person that's going to give you the biggest lesson, you're probably going to get the biggest beating.
Yeah.
But from that beating, I'm going to learn something. So you're never, it's not that they're, the ones are celebrated, but you can't be content with ones because you don't really learn anything.
But I find that, like,
it's a loss.
Like
I'm sure in business, same circumstances.
I've found it, like, when I go into BJJ, if I was partnering up with a blue belt or whatever, I'm only starting out, like, they wouldn't absolutely destroy me. They would say, here's what's going to happen here. They, you know, they don't get anything.
You see, your physicality could give my blue belts trouble, right? So that has to be taken into account, the aspect of that, the physicality. So if you're big and strong, it's going to give somebody difficulties straight away, because that's one of your attributes, and that's an advantage if it's used correctly. And also you trained off and on quite a bit over the years, so that people think about the belts. It's not the belts. It's not. How can I say this? The belts is only symbolic of the person's particular journey.
You said that. It's about like how much...
It's rewarding for what they put on.
It's your journey.
How much effort you put on.
Exactly.
And everybody's different, obviously.
Exactly. And the fighting aspect of it, the competitive aspect of it, is down to the particular person. I could have a white belt who's competitive, really competitive, and I could have a blue belt who's non-competitive, and I can't compare the two. It's like somebody coming to the gym to you and saying, Seamus, I want to lose weight, and somebody saying to you, I want to do a bodybuilding show. They're not going to be training the same way, with the same focus, the same intensity,
their time
the same outcome, standing
in
front of a crowd, you know what I mean, having to produce the goods on the day. It's just
So what I actually meant by that was they'd help me. They wouldn't just destroy me. They would come in and they don't get anything from that, so they actually get something from giving back and going, you know.
See, I think it comes from the top down. Not all gyms are like that. Not all gyms are like that. They don't operate in that way. And some of the gyms still have that attitude where it's like, kill or be killed. I've tried to change that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to change that to include everybody, no matter what, because if you turn up at Team Taurus, then no matter what your outcome or what your outlook is, you should be treated exactly the same with the same outcomes as somebody who wants to be a world champion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're paying for the tuition and you're there willing to learn, then you're as equally important to me as the person who wants to be a world champion.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Competitors want the tech, where people there, some people just need it for life. You know what I mean? This is how they get on. They train and release the endorphins, lost a few pounds, get a wee bit of self-confidence. That's what it's about.
So you've seen the, we've obviously seen the female side of it explode.
Oh,
it's become really, really popular, isn't it?
it's I'll tell you that side of things kind of just was organic, you know.
Probably coming on from a more like looking for self defense and then falling in love with.
Kind of strange one, because in the past it's very difficult to get girls to include in a sport which is so close contact.
Aye.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like lie down there whilst somebody lies on top of you.
Aye.
It's kind of like, oh no, I'm not doing that. It's too close. It's invading my privacy. It's just too close for me.
Yeah.
You know, and then I had a girl started in the gym in McGlynn. She was the first girl came to the gym. My niece was actually my first female student, so she was a junior.
She was the younger, wasn't she?
She's still training. And Emma came on from an older background, and she came to train at one of the classes, and she was coming training all the time, and she stuck at it. She was the one girl. She came to all the boys' classes, sparred with all the boys and no boys. And then she banged in another girl who she knew as well, Stacey Sloan.
Mm-hmm.
So Emma was fighting in a K1 fight. And she banged into Stacey. She was working the reception there. So I was there with Emma. She's warming up. And Stacey says to Emma, what's this about? She says, I'm going to fight K1. She goes, what? What is it? And the reason why Emma was fighting K1 was because she wanted to do MMA.
Aye.
Right. You know, so
it was a progression.
So we're trying to get experience, you know. So Stacey said to Emma, or Emma invited her on, come up. And she turned up. And since that, the two of them have went on an absolute tear. I mean a tear. Stacey just was crowned European champion there past last week in Lisbon. Emma went out in the third round, a very tough bracket, very tough bracket. But them two girls lead the way. So I started off a girls like tester course.
Yeah,
the two girls have been involved with it. I wanted them involved in it because as a wee thank you to them, and obviously they can tell the girls how they came through. So that I knew now what happened. Maybe the boys in the gym, man, that know somebody. It's word of mouth. Derry's word of mouth.
Of course.
So
you have made obviously from business is expanding. You have made the move and all now as well too.
That's great.
Some facility.
Literally a conversation that happened, and it moved so quickly between me and Kevin Hergan. It was just literally a conversation.
The place looks on really.
Like it is. It is honestly God. It is really well finished. Whenever I walked about the building after it was done, I was like, right, this is exactly what we wanted. No, I would like to train in that gym, and I would like to roll in that place, you know, up the stairs, and I was like, no, this is we wanted this.
Brilliant.
And I think as well, two of us are semi-OCD in what we do, you know what I mean? Just driven forward. He knows what he wants to do, I know what I want to do, and we work well together, and it's a good light-hearted relationship as well, you know what I mean? It's not too...
I can see your system starting to be in place. Obviously, the business wise, growing. So and because it grows, you need better systems. And it had to move on from there. The passion, and by the way, I think it's brilliant. You know, and I think it's going to keep growing that way. Because if you don't have any systems, there's only, I suppose, so many people you can help. And your aim is obviously to help as many people as you can.
This is the thing. I'm a competitor at heart.
Aye.
Which is selfish. Yeah. You all know. You do know you've competed. It's any competition is selfish. It's about me. Nice. You know what I mean? And then things have changed over the last probably 3 years or so. I had a thing that I had to adjust for my own life about 3 years ago, and then Mrs. got pregnant, and then things started changing then, you know. So I concentrated on like how can I make the place run better, because I can't be the competitor during this period of time. It's very hard for me as well to balance the coach and the competitor, because I'm 100%.
You have to be,
you know. So that's where the change came. And then whenever I moved premises, I was like, right, now I'm on the deep end. I need to look at how do you run the place as a
You have to run it as, exactly. And when you and the thing is me and Noel were chatting the other guys about as well too. When you're in that business so much all the time, day in and day out, from a coaching aspect, you don't actually even see how the business runs or how the business needs to run or how can I move it forward. You do have to kind of not take yourself out of it completely, but you do have to step back to a certain degree to be able to go, right, well, look, if you're looking at that business from the outside in as maybe somebody else, not even as the owner, how can I make it move forward? What do I need to put in place? What are the systems I need to put in place to make this place grow or to even sustain or whatever? And it's hard to do that when you're in there day in and day out coaching.
It's a shift in mindset too. Of course. Because you have to believe that this product that you have, which is BJJ and the club, is going to help people. And you have to be able to let people know. Like, you're quite humble and not an introvert, but you're not big on Facebook.
No,
you have to go out there and show.
I have to be more now. Like, you think, from my background, I'm 5 years university, 3 university qualifications. I go and get a job, and like, I don't get me wrong, I was teaching from year to year and securing contracts from year to year. That went on for 8 years. Then I leave that on a whim.
Yeah.
They go and do jiu-jitsu.
Sure is, yeah.
And dairy. You know what I mean? So yeah. I didn't care about the business aspect. I only thought about what I wanted to do.
The sporting aspect.
My dad sat me down and he was like, what are you doing? Honestly, he was like, what are you doing, Lewis? And I was like, I have an idea that I want to do it. Martin, you're over 30, right? You're on a job. You get good wages. You have good pension. You have good outlook and this.
Good security.
And you're leaving for this? And I was like, I have to do it. I don't know why. I just have to do it. I have to try. If I didn't try, then I would be like, when I grow older, I'd be like, oh, should have done
it. And picture if you hadn't done it and you were sitting 10 years later kicking yourself. And that's
would you still be wearing the choker? No.
How'd they say it? That's a Ralph Lauren shirt before he made it.
Still wearing Ralph Lauren.
But it's the same with anybody, I suppose. No, like, it is. There's a lot of fear there. There's a lot of questioning yourself and having to make that jump. But then sometimes when it gets to the stage that we've chatted about before, me and Noel, when you don't have any other option, you have to make it work.
So I remember you, Seamus, working in the gym in the town and having, like myself at the time, had nothing.
That's it.
Fair pretty. And I remember Noel as well knocking about.
Still fucking nothing.
You know what I mean? But it comes down to sheer passion and dedication. It comes down to that. And you can't, like, for me, it's not about money, it's about people. And that was my biggest problem for moving forward, is I was thinking about myself and my team.
Yeah.
But I never thought about the money aspect. Yeah. And I never thought about how can I move this forward. Because I was happy,
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mentally happy. But then what happens, life changes.
Of course.
Family. I want to get a better academy. I want to try and promote the new people. I want to help people.
Shifting values, man. Exactly. That happens as you progress in anything.
As you get
there's
older.
An evolution there. There's a pattern, and you know.
I know how valuable a tool it is to helping people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
And we are, no matter what everybody says, we are in the service industry.
Of course.
So therefore, they already serve people.
Yeah.
So therefore, when you're there to serve people, you have to provide the best service possible.
Yeah.
And I know it can help so much,
100%.
Especially people like who are falling drinking drugs, for example, depression, anxiety, like this town's God only knows how bad it is.
But the thing is too is, like, no, doing that and what you're saying is right, of course, and when you're looking to help people and you know what you can do to help people as well too, but sometimes we burn ourselves out.
Aye.
And then if we're not operating on the way we should be operating, you're not able to do that.
That's me, you know what I mean? That's me. If somebody had sat me down and says, oh, you need to watch for burnout, you'd be like, that's for all people. That's for lazy people.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm not like that.
Hachi, man, it's a fucking,
it's a bad thing. It's a very real thing.
So do you feel that you have kind of a wee bit more structure in place now?
Aye. So I've tried to get things structurally correct, and I've tried to like get people and help me. Like I'm a type of person. I like to help people who help me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So
that's right.
The people, whenever I was there to start, and I was struggling, and these people believed in me, I try and help them.
Yeah.
I don't look to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I look to the people who have helped me, because we're there for the same reasons and for the same factors, and we've got a similar outlook.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I can mold them, it's just that
they
have the same values.
Where we came from, exactly, and how we started. And even if I can help them in some way with that, so I've looked to them and for classes and even like advice and how to move forward. And people think that like it's Team Torres is me, like in Derry. It's not. It's a number of people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So
I head it up, but I'm not the be all and end all.
No.
You know what I mean?
And you need a team. Like I've known that from day dot. You need a team around you. Like it's the same with me in the gym. If I don't have a good team there, it's not operating. It's as simple as that. And then you do end up on that place on your own trying to run it, and then you don't even enjoy it as much.
No.
And it's better as a team. It's better as a team anyway, because everybody gets enjoyment out of it.
Exactly.
Everybody else prospers as well too. So
exactly.
I think that's it's the same in any business.
Exactly.
So what about the future, bud? I know we chatted about how BJJ is changing and females are getting more in there. What about your future, even competition wise
is in the back burner. It has been in the back burner, because if I can't give it 100%, I'm not doing it.
Aye.
So what I'll do is I'll concentrate on the business end of things, being the best coach that I can possibly be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can get the best results for people possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because the competitive side takes a lot of you mentally and physically.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the training that I put on for it. I sought out the best people I could whenever I was training. Like, we're doing strength and conditioning 2 and 3 days a week.
Mm.
Yeah, and jiu-jitsu and variety of our drills twice a day, 5 days a week. Yeah. So there's at least 12, 13 sessions a week.
I always remember that you saying, like, that's exactly what you've done, and obviously it works. You were saying, I look for the best person in this, the best person in that, and that's what I did. I went to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even remember you bringing Sebastian down years ago in the YMCA. You sought him out.
Of course.
And then brought him down.
No, that's a strange story for Sebastian.
He was a brown belt, I think, at the time.
At the time, I met Sebastian, who's Sebastian Torres, who is the head of Team Torres. So there's two instructors. There's me and him. So we're the head instructors. So I'm his only black belt. So I run Derry and he runs Newry and Lisburn and Dundalk as well. So there's more up there. Right. So what happened was I went to a competition one time. It was many years ago and I was competing in freestyle wrestling and I was competing in no-gi jiu-jitsu. So on one mat there was freestyle wrestling competition going on and the other mat there's a no-gi competition going on. So I was running from one mat to the other mat trying to compete, right? So you imagine it was back in the day where like... It was just prehistoric compared to where it is now. I know it's not that long ago in time, but it came forward massively from then, right? So I looked across and I'm busted, bowling boys around the place and like getting smashed and I'm mad and getting up. Man, I won a match here, won a match there, and we lost a match here. I look across and there's this wee curly haired boy, about 60 kilos, throwing people through the air as a furlong. Throwing them and then catching them nice and gently, we put them down and submitting them and then giving a wee rub in the head. And like, who is this boy? You know what I mean? Because I'm like, if I walk past that boy in a nightclub, me bang him. You know, I was just mesmerised and I got one of the guys is there, a guy called Mark Montgomery. He was there and I says, who's the wee curly haired boy? And he says, he's Sebastian Torres. I says, not Irish. He says, no, he's Brazilian. I says, right. So and he goes, he's a BJJ brown belt. I was like. Like it was like the heavens opened. I was like, he's a what? A BJJ brown belt? I was like, Jesus, they don't exist now. Not in Ireland, you know what I mean? It's like, can't be real. I don't know, seeing the Virgin Mary. But anyway, it's one of them ones. So I was like, I need to train with this guy. So he gave me his phone number and I rang him. I says, hello. And he says, hello. Is this Sebastian? Yes. Can I come and train? Yes. When can come and train? Yes.
His man knows
the English. So I'm going to send him a text message. So I landed up this house, hardly any English whatsoever. We trained. He strangled me 4 times in 2 months.
Petted in the head.
You know that they start off, we have a sign of respect. We touch hands and you go easy to start. Now, 30 seconds of tap plus the touching hands plus the feet out period. Right? So you imagine I was tapping more than Michael Flatley. So I was like, came away. I was like, what the fuck? And he goes, we go out tonight? And I was like, all right. So he knew no English. I knew no Portuguese. And a nightclub drinking together. And from then, that was it.
Brilliant.
He came up, you brought him up to YMCA, and I was over for the wee, kind of, it was a seminar type thing.
It's very early days, yeah.
I was working the metro as a doorman, same thing happened. He was in, and I shook his hands, oh, what's the crack, and blah, blah, blah. And whatever happened, the doorman says, who fucks that prick here, and what's going on? And I saw, listen, man, you need to settle, Petal, because if you went near that man, like, same thing would happen, he would fucking fly through the air. But he's so, like,
such a humble not, man.
He's a humble, and he's out having crack. He was smiling, laughing, there was no badness at all, anyway. But what I'm saying is, he's so, not insignificant, but he's small and he's slight. And
of course,
but that's the beauty of the sport.
The beauty of the art. Yeah. That's the very beauty of the art.
Like, when did he move here?
I can't say exactly, probably 10, 12, 13 years ago. 13 years ago.
Mm.
He was an international athlete for Brazil in the judo, an Olympic judo program.
Aye.
He was living in Sao Paulo on the program and got injured. And I believe that within a period of time of getting injured, he lost his sponsorship, and he was in Ireland within a short period of time then because he had to work. He was going through this whole program from 13 years of age, being a looked after athlete by the state.
Jeez.
And then within one bad injury, boom, the whole lot was taken away, and he ended up here in Ireland.
And see, when you did kind of connect, did you even see kind of how it was going to? Was there any type of vision there? No, you wanted to learn.
Basically, what happened was this: we both got selected for the first. Money-based jiu-jitsu tournament in Ireland.
Right.
So I got an email, or I can't remember, an email or phone call at that time. You've been selected. Would you like to come to this invitational? So I was like, right. So I put £1,000 up to see who could win. And I was like,
who's that?
Grabapalooza.
Oh, I
remember. So there was 9 of us selected, and then 3 had he won the entry, I think, if I remember correctly. So to be included along with the 9 in Ireland was a big thing for me. I was like, "Wow, that's great." But my back was wrecked at that time.
Yeah.
I might have still trouble with my back. But I shouldn't even be near that competition, but because I selected that, so I'm going to go. And the competitor, I'm going.
Of course.
And Sebastian was selected too. So as he was selected, we trained together, but he was on the opposite side of the bracket. So that day we knew that we would have had to compete. Mm. Now he had to spank me, but I would expect him to spank everybody.
Yeah.
And that day we had two like really frustrating days. We went out early. I couldn't believe he went out.
Jeez.
I couldn't believe it. And we were sitting at the back. And we're behind the curtain in the back. And anybody who knows who Sebastian is, and anybody's ever trained him, will tell you how good he is.
Yeah.
And we're sitting up against the wall, and he says, looked at me, he says, just, we can't do this anymore. And I said, no. I says, well, what do we do? And he says, we come together.
Mm.
I was like, right. So how do we do that? He goes, I'm clueless at this stage. All I have to do is train.
Mm. Yeah.
I says, right, I affiliate onto you, which means be associated with him.
Yeah.
But the affiliation was friendship.
Mm. Right.
It was like a
drawn up contract.
No contracts. No. It's a common thing. It's, I go to his house and stay. I know all his family, his missus. I knew Sebastian for his wife.
Yeah.
He knows my missus, my family. We're very much bound by something more than just jiu-jitsu. You know.
Yeah.
We're very good friends. Brilliant. So after that, we came together and started off with one or two students. He had a few students. And then we just sort of kept going. It's just that idea in your head.
Mm.
But now that I know more about it, looking back, if I had a new then what I knew now, I probably wouldn't. This is impossible.
Aye.
But then it was just like a dream, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because as you know yourself, the deeper you get into something, you realise it's infinite the amount you can learn, you know?
It's like starting out in training, like starting out luffing wits, you knew nothing about business, or even starting out as a personal trainer, you knew nothing about business or anything else. It just evolves as you evolve, as the whole thing evolves.
At the time, you're thinking, Derry champion sounds great. To start, like, because you're competitive, Derry champion, Jesus, imagine that. But then you realise, like, there's Northern Ireland champion, then there's Irish champion, then there's British, then there's European.
As you said about the rabbit hole, when you do dig a hole, like you just look around and see how big it's getting, and you feel like it's fucking getting even bigger and bigger, and you know less, so you know you need to struggle for more stuff or more whatever
it
is.
I put it in terms of fitness, like some people maybe say to themselves, I'd like to do a bodybuilding show.
Aye.
I'd like to win the one the Guildhall. You know what I mean? That's what I think. But then when he starts bodybuilding, he starts realising, the British Championships is really good. Naba Belfast is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the British one, that's really good. Yeah. And then the people, the British one's going, the universe is where's that?
Exactly.
And so that rabbit hole is never ending. Mm-hmm. Then they're thinking Olympia, you know. So jiu-jitsu is the same. It's kind of like at levels, where do you see yourself at? And kind of, in any venture, I think the less you know to start, the better. Let your passion take it.
Yeah,
you know
that's right.
Let your passion pull you through.
It's like yesterday, even when we were chatting about, like, we were over at a business seminar in London, and he was saying, the same guy was talking about kind of, in business, like figures and money and blah, 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 and being able to actually appreciate kind of where you are and kind of how successful you already are. Because when you do, you just keep changing. You keep the goalposts change all the time. So, right, I want to get here and then it changes. I want to get here and then it changes. And it constantly changes until you actually accept, right, I'm actually doing okay, or things are actually good, and let things evolve naturally. Like, I suppose in a competing aspect, that's the exact same thing for
We're accountable as coaches for performance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if somebody puts their trust in you as a coach, and they're telling you that they want to compete, and if you're doing everything you can do and they're doing everything that you can do, then you're accountable for how the outcome is, depending, right? So they trust you to take them forward. That's a big thing for me. And that's where the aspect of where my passion comes from as a yard coach. They trust me with their body and their minds, because it can be hard getting beat. It can be hard training as well, because to get to a good level, you can't train easy. You know, it's difficult. And they trust me with that, and that's where I'm at with that. I take that on board very, very seriously.
It's a responsibility.
It's a big responsibility. Yeah. And some people don't see it like that, Seamus. Yeah. Some people, like, and Derry and further afield, just see it as, we'll just get him in there and see how he does. Or
feel like shit if someone got beat. You're feeling their pain.
I'm the coach that probably everybody hates to see a competition, because I'm the boy that's going mad. I'm the boy going mad. But it's not against the other competitors. No. It's not against the other team.
You're the parent on the sideline in the football match.
Not shouting obscenities, but I'm trying to coach them properly through the system, and I'm encouraging them the whole time, because they're one of mine.
Of course.
They're one of my extended family. You know what I mean? That sounds cliche.
No, not at all.
I spend more time with people.
Exactly.
And that's particular. Like, I spend more time with people in my training environment than I would spend with my dad.
Because coming up to competitions, I fucking never leave the place.
But it's a hard one too, because it's that competition environment. It's like kind of like you love these people, but they're trying to push you so hard that you're going to break.
100%.
Yeah. And at that time, you don't really like those people.
Yeah.
And then you come off and they're the first person to console you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mad relationship. Like, they're the first person to say, no, you're getting going good. But I didn't, because I've done this. And they're like, no, no, no. Mm. And the same person who's trying to, like, beat you up is the same person who tries to lift you up too.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's the coaching role as well. Mm. You have to be a bit back from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have to be like, right, look, it's technically, this is what we have to do.
Mm.
But like, in every walk of life, there's some people there that expect they get a lot off you, but give nothing back.
Mm. Aye.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's
energy robbers.
Energy vampires.
You're going to have that, aren't you, like, in anything. But obviously, you're helping people that are outside the competition thing. And I felt that when I was doing show prep with clients, and you've prepped a few people too, like, you do put a lot on them. A lot on them.
Yeah.
Like, and it fucking does. As a business, it's actually probably counterproductive.
Do you know, you know Tommy McKay?
Carefully. I know Tommy
is a great fella. He's one of my coaches in the gym. We're good friends a long time. A super accomplished martial artist. The most highest 100% level competitor we have.
Absolute
in the gym,
gentleman, too,
absolute really. Gentleman. And he says to me, he says, competitors cost you time and money.
Big time.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And that is that in a nutshell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, we were having a fighter meeting recently, and he says, you cost us money.
Mm.
I was like, so we do. No, I never thought about it. Like,
no, that's right.
Do you know, I could... I have to shut that class off. I have to get somebody to take that.
Yeah.
I have to drive there. I have to sit there. We get something to eat. I look after them. I spend 12, 13, 14 hours there.
Yeah.
I come back again. And then I sit in the house where I go, right, so there's a day I didn't see my wee boy.
Aye.
There's money that we're out today.
Mm.
And there's time I didn't see my wife.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like...
But it's a second thought because you love it so much.
It's
because
I love it.
You feel,
I feel like I want to help them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And you feel every bit of their journey because you were on it. And that's the thing. We do tend to bond with people that were on the same path as us or think in the same kind of mindset of course, as us. Like, and you love that because that drives you. Because their motivation, fucking... they're obviously, like we talked about energy vampires, they're almost the opposite effect. They're giving to you something because they're so driven. You're like, holy fuck, how are they doing that?
It makes me look lazy.
How are they doing that?
It makes me look lazy. And the same thing for negativity. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I spoke about this recently in our own places.
Because you do that? You talk to them about mindset? No, it just isn't. Someone told me that actually recently. You spent about 45 minutes on a session.
I'm
just
very,
talking to them
I'm
about...
I'm very hands-on because
it's just brilliant.
I know there's a lot of people out there... I'm sure the same in your games, guessing. And there's some people, very few out there, that know the formula.
Yeah.
Right? We got the stage, we know the formula. All right? So we know the formula that works for us.
Yeah.
So if you're going the right direction, you just need to be, like, reassured. It's going to be all right.
Aye.
And remember who you're training with, too.
Mm.
If you're in a room and you want to be a competitor and you're comparing yourself against your teammates, that's a bad thing.
Aye.
Yeah.
100%.
Because if your teammates are trying to be exceptional along me, then there's two people with exceptional outlooks trying to get where they want to be.
Yeah.
That's not your competition.
Yeah.
No. Your competition is somebody else on another team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And even at that, I hate to refer the word competition in the sense like, oh, it's them and us. It's not them and us, it's a learning experience.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I see it as. I always, when I competed, I always made a thing of thanking everybody I competed against.
Yeah.
People used to think I was mad.
Mm.
And they used to, what are you thanking for? Mm. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I was like, because they turned up today, they teach me something.
Teach
and it's a hard lesson they're looking to teach me. You know what I mean? Where I was, won or lost.
But you've learned.
I learned.
Yeah.
And I have to thank somebody for that. He took time out of his day, came here, put it on the line, and fought in a competition.
And made you better for it.
I made both of us better. Mm. So I was thankful for that. But they just, people just think, you're fucking nuts.
And then you're, I suppose when you're doing that, then you're trying to pass that on to your students now,
course.
Having that kind of mindset, of being humble.
They don't know the struggles. I'm sure the same in your place, same as you as well. No, people don't understand the struggles. They come onto your place and you're there and you personal train them and you show them what to do.
Yeah,
we spent 10 years not knowing what was going on.
Sure, exactly,
we train is exactly the same. You're reading magazines, looking here, looking for inspiration, looking to some boy who just looks better than you, who could be genetically better than you, for example.
Yeah.
What are you doing? And I'm not able to tell you because God's given these great genetics. Do you know what I mean? He's out the weekend partying and he's doing this and you're sitting in the house eating chicken and broccoli. You know what I mean? You're still like trying to shed body fat or whatever. So it's just one of those things, you know.
The journey made is so much longer. And as I say, there's young boys in your club that's grown in 6 months. What probably I took 5 years more.
That kid I was talking about, the Europeans, like, he's trained less than 2 years, probably technically more proficient than some purple belts 10 years ago.
Yeah, but you're going to get people that just do get it. Aye. They get it faster. Aye. They pick
but,
it up a lot
but
faster.
I do believe
so
do,
much, man.
I do believe that's got to do with passion, but
yeah,
because you have to have somebody who's. I'm sure your best clients you've ever had are people who were involved with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who give you everything. Aye. You know what I mean? You don't have to turn around and say, what's your dad? Like, what's it? Just like they give you everything.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, they trust you with, you have a good relationship straight away.
Mm.
And they trust me and I trust them and we get the best results.
Yeah. Brilliant. Excellent.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I think it's.
It's good.
It's a wrap.
My ears are sore, hey. My ears are red. I think these offers.
I hope I don't talk to you much.
No, brilliant fuck, time. Really, really enjoyed it. Good to have you on.
No, we just want to thank Marty for coming on the show. Yeah. It's great to have you on. It's good to see the presence now as well on Facebook and stuff. And a long may it continue, man.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Excellent.
And I'll be down on tomorrow. I think I'm down now. Me and Naz down tomorrow. So
very good.
Cheers.
Look forward to having you.
Have a day.
Thanks, Marty. That's us.